CPR 101. Get the 411 on your 911. Here's your host and emergency room physician, Dr. Lee Vinoker.
Hi, and welcome to ER 101. We have a great show and an interesting topic that comes up all the time, and we've just gotten through cold and flu season, is antibiotic use or overuse as we see it today. And there was an interesting study that looked at delaying antibiotics for infections and outcomes. So my first guest is an expert in that area, Dr. Roddy Vukmir. He is both board certified in emergency medicine and critical care medicine, so he knows a lot about antibiotics and antibiotic resistance. He holds an adjunct professorship in emergency medicine at Temple University, and he's the chief clinical officer for National Guardian Risk Retention Groups, and he's a frequent guest on the show. So welcome back, Dr. Vukmir. Thanks for being here.
Oh, good morning, Lee. Thanks for the opportunity.
So, you know, there was a recent study in the British Medical Journal, and, you know, they're claiming it's one of the biggest, that looked at it, where they talked about delaying prescriptions when people come in. So I guess they looked at a group where they gave no prescriptions, where they gave immediate prescriptions, and then where they delayed prescriptions. And they sort of found that, I guess, if they got the expectation right in people, that there was less use when they delayed the prescription. I'm assuming they said, well, here, if you're getting worse, you can take it. And educated them what to watch out for. And then there was higher satisfaction, and they seemed to have lower, you know, they called them reconsultation rates. So they seemed to come back less for the issue. And I think, you know, that's a big problem. We see people, as I said to you before, my pet peeve is people get a cough and they come in within a couple hours, you know? So nobody toughs it out and rides it out. So what do you think about this?
Well, again, the study itself, I think, was a good study, and it you know, it helps to achieve a valid endpoint. Emergency medicine physicians have done this for years, probably the last 5 or 10 years. You know, emergency medicine has been, you know, out on the forefront of this issue as well, and kind of as you said, a lot of physicians have a suspicion that you know, maybe we are giving too much in the way of antibiotics. So, you know, for years they've kind of offered a prescription to sort of fill. You know, if things don't improve. In the pediatric primary care community, kind of the parlance here is a SNAP prescription. So they describe it, you know, as a safety net antibiotic prescription. And, you know, when they do the education for families, they basically lay out a couple of parameters. You know, there is a 1, 2, 3 day pathway that says, you know, if you feel your child is significantly worsened, you know, toxic appearance, high fever, certainly come back to see us, but then you should use this prescription as well. And then they have kind of a back end 4 or 5 days. They say, okay, fine. If symptoms have failed to improve, not worsen, but by 4 and 5 days, if things aren't improved, then feel free to use this prescription.
Well, I think, you know, there were some valid points in the beginning, and I think maybe, you know, that's the issue with the public, because certainly, you know, we know that in the past, a lot of strep throat that was untreated, and we're talking years ago, right, almost pre-antibiotics, resulted in bad complications. So, you know, I think people have that in their kind of psyche that they worry about, okay, you know, if I let this go. And, you know, this has become the age of antibiotics. And I know next we'll talk about some of the dangers with that. But do you think, what can we, you know, tell people so that they don't have to worry? Because if you look at the statistics of rheumatic fever today, I mean, it's practically non-existent in industrialized societies. So how do you kind of balance that with patients, taking in mind that I'm sure not everybody died of an ear infection, you know, back in the pre-antibiotic days? I mean, we do have immune systems, right? So it's not like it was always fatal for kids.
Sure, sure. And again, you bring up a valid point, and it gives us the opportunity to discuss this, because as time and training go on, you know, there are, you know, folks that really haven't seen disease or disease prevalence. But earlier in practice, and even to this day, you can still see geriatric patients that come in with mitral valve disease, you know, that have had valve replacement, or congestive cardiomyopathy that were literally due to untreated or poorly treated rheumatic fever. So you're right, it is in the memory, it is in the psyche of some physicians that have practiced because they've seen it. Now, as you also point out, you know, as hygiene has improved, as treatment has improved, then you do have sort of herd immunity. You know, if most subjects in the population have treated and don't have the organism, or their health, like you said, you know, there's an immunologic response, and we really don't see these catastrophic complications anymore. So, you know, we tend to focus on the superative, or the, you know, sort of the bacterial abscess, local inflammation complications, but we've sort of forgotten about the non-superative, the, you know, the rheumatic fever complications. Now, all that being said, you know, the next question and step is, how do you reassure a family that, you know, that singular person isn't going to be the person in their family? And it's always a good question. So sometimes you review a little bit of the history, the fact that, you know, we just don't see this much anymore, and that you start with the disease condition and sort of go through the criteria that would sort of allow them to come to their own level of comfort that things sort of are not going to go down that road. I think when you look at, you know, the sort of conditions that patients come in with, you know, we have a couple of categories. But, you know, if you think about, you know, an upper respiratory infection, you know, that's one that we all sort of know. You know, somebody comes in with a sore throat or pharyngitis, what they consider sinusitis, and lastly, kind of a cough illness, which is bronchitis. I think if you kind of subdivide those, review the, you know, the treatment pathways with patients, I think that helps them to understand better.
Right. And I think people also forget, and I say, you know, they don't tough it out, but they come in with the symptoms, you're right, of a head cold and a sore throat. But, you know, the difference is we're talking viral versus bacterial, right? So the key, one of the key symptomatologies of a bacterial infection should be a relatively high fever. Not to say that a virus, because we know the flu can cause high fevers, but, you know, a sore throat with a really high fever, then, you know, come in and get swabbed and get checked, you know, versus people that come in with like a scratchy throat, because all colds start out with a sore throat. That's how the virus gets into us, right? So telling, you know, letting people know that, you know, high fevers are one of the signs that maybe it can be a bacterial infection.
Sure, sure. You're absolutely correct. You know, it's interesting, though, if you look at this, you know, the studies that have been done that it looked at sort of height of fever, you know, it isn't as strong as an association as we think. But, you know, this is one that families hold pretty near and dear. And you know, here are some guidelines for that. I think for the adult population, you know, and again, even in critical care as well, you're looking for sort of more specificity than sensitivity. So, you know, let's say that fever, you know, based on something, you know, like the Centaur criteria, say it was 38.5 centigrade, and, you know, that equivalent to roughly, you know, 101, 103, right. 100.1.3 for the adult population. So, again, if people say they have a fever, you know, the first question is, did they report a fever at home or do they have a fever now? And two, what's the extent of that fever?
Right. No, and I think that's an important issue that we can talk a little bit more about. But the fever with the symptoms makes you think about it and certainly get it checked out. But you're listening to ER 101. I'm Dr. Lee Van Oker on Radio MD. Stay well.